Isn't crystal supposed to have special?
It feels cold to the child to touch. They have all sorts of theories concerning all these malas, we were introduced to something called Rudraksha mala. Does it mean anything to you? No. I think there's one in my Chota. They got also a whole book written about this, and only they can really understand what it means. They say that each seed, which is a bead, has got so many facets, and depending upon how many facets it has, it has various qualities. And someone gave us even a pamphlet in Rishikesh now, that it could cure you of this, that, and merely wearing it. And I, to be brutally honest and frank, I was put off this thing, because the man who was introducing me to this was was completely crazy. And that's supposed to be, if it is genuine, it's supposed to be very powerful. Then they have these specialization. That is, if you are a devotee of Lord Shiva, you use Rudraksha. If you are a devotee of Vishnu, you use the Tulasi Mala, you know, the other ones that they use. And if you are using some Shakti mantra, you use crystal beads. But I'm not quite sure whether those things are all that important. And then once you get into it, then there are endless theories. Like, for instance, that they must be good, flawless, like diamonds. If they are flawed, then of course there is a problem, it's trouble. It's good to use a mala at least once a day, in the morning, at least. We may need it even later, because when you hold the mala in your hand, then the mind has some more incentive, some more aid. It's a great aid, there's no doubt about that. But that's all. Not more than that. More than that, you can have all these rules and regulations. If you wish to observe them, all right, but they are good. One is that you should not expose the mala, which only means don't become an exhibitionist. And the other is that the mala should not hang below your navel. So you hold it like this. That stops you from falling asleep. Or if you do fall asleep, you realize that you have fallen asleep, because the mala has fallen from your hands. And these are all symbols. Another rule is that you don't use your index finger. Don't do this. Because the index finger suggests vanity, ego, fault-finding nature, accusing nature. So whether or not there is something about using the index finger, there is a symbolic meaning behind it. That if you want to be benefited by repeating the mantra, first abandon egoism. But I might suggest, if you are able to abandon your ego, then you don't need anything from there. You are free. What do you want? Do you want to sit and meditate? Why do you use a crystal mala? Just because it's nice. No other purpose. No other purpose. Even in India, now it's becoming more and more difficult to find genuine articles. Right? Even Rudrakshamala, they say they can make from ordinary wood. How they make it, I don't know. But they say they can do that. What? ₹100 is fairly cheap for a small one. I would say 200-300 rupees. That's it. People are made to believe that if you just wear this, your cold and your headache and your appendicitis goes away. then naturally, for ₹100 and without anything else to do, yes? You don't take any medicine, you don't go to a surgeon, no surgery, no medicine, no injection, nothing at all, just wear this mala, you are free. Why not? That's the propaganda. That is the propaganda. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work. I'm not saying that the other thing works. The chemists or the pharmacists tell you that if you take this, you will never have a headache in your life. You take the pills and still you have a headache. None of these medicines really does you any real good. But still we use them. In the same way it's possible to use these malas as another item of expenditure.
But you pay more for the small mala, which is supposedly more effective. We pay more for treatment, which is supposedly more effective.
Exactly, that's all. But neither of these is really effective. All this is propaganda. Because one basic thing we have forgotten, or at least we ignore, that the body is made of physical substance, and must decay. The same as food kept on the table, which rots in a few days. It's like a machine, you use it carefully, it lasts for some more time. And if you misuse it, it lasts less. That's all. It is bound to disintegrate. This is an axiom, isn't it? That which is born must die. Anything that is born must die. And anything that grows must degenerate. Anything that has been put together must crumble. How can you go against this principle, this axiom? What sort of medicine must we take in order to live forever?
Meditation.
You, whatever you do, that which is born must die. You can meditate for 24 hours of the day. You will live forever next birth. Outside of this body, you will probably live forever. You will live forever outside the body, whether you meditate or not.
Using japa being an artificial thing that you create.
Using japa?
Technique of japa. That also crumbles?
Yes, it must end. It must come. Anything that has a beginning must have an end. Another axiom. Anything that has a beginning must have an end. You start doing japa in order to restrain the mind or stop the mind from chattering away, and that must come to an end, will come to an end.
So, what if you use a mantra to gain something?
You will gain something and then lose it. Yes? You gain something, you must lose it, must. That which comes must go. That which is gained must be lost. And that which has had a beginning must have an end. This is simple. Simple axioms. And there is nothing, now there is no exception to this. So, I have started using a mantra, a mala, and a mantra. That the mala will disintegrate is needs no saying. As you go on using it, it will wear out. The mala will break. Or this will become rough. It will cut your fingers. So you throw it away and get another. It can be lost. It can get broken and all that. Apart from that, even the habit of japa, repeating a mantra that you cultivate, which has had a beginning, must have an end. But the people who evolved this technique of japa have only that in mind. Where does your the japa which has had a beginning, where does it end? It ends when the mind doesn't move anymore, when the mind is stabilized, completely, utterly stabilized. That's exactly what they want. When the mind is utterly stabilized, the mantra becomes one with your mind. I've tried to explain it several times. First, you go on repeating the mantra, right? As you repeat the mantra, you still feel that there is peripheral distraction. You are repeating your mantra. Something like fish in the river, nibbling at you. Something is nibbling at you, all over the body, everywhere. And unless you are very careful, you are easily distracted. Supposing you are very careful, there is no distraction. That is, the mind is totally directed towards the mantra that is being repeated. But through the corner of your eyes or inner eyes, you are able to feel the distraction trying to distract you. The feeling is exactly of fish nibbling at your body, at your legs. Right. But you are a very industrious student. And so you are not distracted. And then there is the feeling, I am repeating the mantra. Or I am hearing the mantra. Or alternately, I am repeating the mantra, I am hearing the mantra. Unless you pay attention to the sound of the mantra, you don't know that you are repeating the mantra, yes? You have to hear it, you have to pay attention to it. So now suddenly a question pops up. Am I repeating this mantra or am I listening to this mantra? What am I doing? Both? What do you mean both? Am I one or two? I seem to be divided within myself in as much as I am repeating the mantra and I am myself hearing it. Doesn't make sense. How can there be this division within myself? Or am I becoming schizophrenic? Right? This question arises. As this question arises, the attention is intensely focused upon the gulf between the two. I am repeating the mantra and I am hearing the mantra. And there is a gap between the two. And the attention is intensely focused in that gap because that holds the key to this division. As the attention gets more and more strongly focused on that gap, the gap begins to narrow. And there comes a stage when suddenly the gap is abolished and the two seem to become one, the repeater of the mantra and the hearer of the mantra. And at that point, the mantra stops. Stops in the sense that you don't repeat it consciously. According to the masters, you become one with the mantra, or your chaitanya, your consciousness becomes one with the mantra, or whatever it is. But there is no conscious repetition of the mantra, because conscious repetition implies the division. As long as I am consciously repeating the mantra, there is this division. I am hearing the mantra, I am repeating the mantra. So that the mantra which was deliberately introduced in order to control the mind has come to an end. That which had a beginning has had an end. Must. But that is the end which the yogis are looking for. And it is because this end cannot be reached by other means more easily that they invented this japa method of technique of japa. Question time.
Is he going to work? Where?
No.
Where?
No.
Melbourne? America? Which part of America?
California.
Everybody ends at... Ah! That's great. That's great. How long will you be there?
3 months.
3 months? Oh, you'll have... I'll give you a number of contacts.
Thank you.
You'll enjoy it.
I'm sure. Yes, but even then there is a little gap, little distance.
And sometimes what you were just describing happens, that sort of awareness of the split comes up, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just the...
The mind is concentrated, the mind is looking at it. The mind is looking at the mantra. The mind is not look. You see, as long as the mind is looking at the mantra, or the attention is looking at the mantra, you are aware of the mantra sound intensely, then this question, where is this inner division, must arise. You can't make it arise. You can't ask that question. It has to happen. When it happens, the attention leaves the mantra alone, which goes on, but pays attention to the gap. How has this division arisen?
Using the fingers for the japa, the concentration doesn't seem to last as long.
That is a controversial issue. Some people say it's the other way around. It depends upon how what your temperament is. Some people cannot sit still at all. I've told you the story of a Swami who was a very great man, except that he could not sit still. If he sat still even for 2 minutes to listen to you talk or even chanting, Hare Rama, he'll go off to sleep. And so, whatever he was doing, his hands had to be doing something else. He might be chanting, he might be listening to a talk, or he might be participating in worship. Whatever it is, fingers had to be doing something else. And you know, you get the small sacred ash and kumkum powders. He used to make the powder. He used to take a whole stack of the powders and holy ash, and he had to prepare the powders, little packets. And that was his job. It needed an intense attention to do that. So, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Is he still there in the head?
No.
Because there's another old man that does that now while he's chanting.
But I don't know about him. The other man, he just could not sit still. And if you belong to that category, then you'll find twirling the beads useful, keeps the attention, instead of distracting it. It is not necessary, it is not indispensable, it is not all that important, but it's a tremendous help. What is it doing there for? Some?
Just study.
What kind of study?
The California College of Podiatric Medicine.
Hmm. What does it mean?
Well, I have learned. The Americans are doing a lot of work with biomechanics.
Surgery.
That we're advancing what we are here. So. and they're running a course for 25 people from English-speaking people from around the world. Been able to get into that course. I feel at my age, you either progress or stagnate, so I thought I'd better get going.
Only in waking state.
Well, what, I mean, in normal, conscious, eyes open.
Yes. Yes. Sure. 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 You can become aware of it even outside of this practice called japa. But with this mantra, it becomes readily clear. It's very much like, what do they do? Something they bury a meal. If they want to find out if there's a block in your intestines or so, they give you a bury a meal and then take an x-ray. They could probably detect the thing even without the bury a meal, but with the bury a meal it stands out. So when you introduce this mantra, the gap becomes very clear, apparent. Without it, for instance, you are, you become aware of your own thoughts. You can do that. You become aware of your own thoughts. What does it mean? Am I thinking the thought or am I observing the thought? Am I the observer or am I the observed? You can go on. But that's more difficult. And therefore they introduce a mantra. A mantra is a catalyst and it's a neutral agent. It's only feeling, luckily.
Yes. I know it's only a feeling, but it's a really strong feeling. And then I usually get really scared and stop or open my eyes or something. What is that? Is that just because I'm doing too much pranayama?
No. It's very good. It's only a feeling. That sort of lightness. It's a feeling of lightness. One doesn't know why it happens.
Not physically.
It's not physical, no.
But it doesn't feel like
it's usually not physical. I mean, don't know, it can happen. The physical body also might respond to it sometime. When it responds to it, probably you may fall down. you don't go up, but you fall down. Because the lead weight or dead weight that the body is seems to be temporarily suspended, so that the body is not anchored on the ground, and so you fall down.
But then it's usually an incredible fear.
Fear only because you think you are going to fly away or disappear. Any situation where our solid reality is threatened creates fear.
I stopped doing pranayama for a while.
It's very nice. you might levitate into
me. When you sit for, say, quite a long period of time, personally speaking, I can recognize a number of sort of stages of degrees of concentration. But I'm wondering whether it's wise to sort of believe too much in that. sort of what Jan's talking about, you can move from step to step.
Why not? It is happening. You see, valid or not valid, it is happening. What is happening, let it happen. As long as you don't sort of look for it, it is only when you sit down and start doing pranayama and hope. If you start looking for levitation, then there are two possibilities. One, that you may hallucinate, that you are levitating. And the other, you get frightened. Instead, let it happen. If it happens, happen, let it happen. If you even levitate, let it happen too. What's wrong with that? You saw that man in Delhi, and he didn't. He didn't scream. We saw a man levitate. The mind playing tricks, it is certainly associated with some nadis. What the yogis call nadis, which is very simple. If you have experienced it. On some days you feel light, on some days you feel heavy. I'm not talking about yoga practice, nothing. Which is ordinary. Everybody in the world feels heavy on some days and light on some other days. What is it that makes you feel heavy or that makes you feel light?
Gravity.
It's not gravity. I mean, your weight is the same. The weight of the body is exactly the same. It is not altered. Sometimes depending entirely upon the mood, it's nothing. It's not even dependent upon the weather conditions or your diet, or just the mood.
So, would you know about other sensations, like say concentrating on chakras, and you've got burning sensations? Or
any strong and, I'm using this word rather loosely, force at concentration can create a sensation of heat, burning. When you force the mind, when you force the attention and forcibly bring about concentration of mind, heat is generated.
Does anyone know how? Or why?
This is the observed phenomenon. So that when it happens, we recognize it and we don't panic. It's only because of I'm forcing my attention upon this center, and therefore there is a burning sensation. I'm not patting myself on the back saying it's a good thing, nor am I frightened that it is a bad thing.
So therefore, if that's creating discomfort,
if it can create discomfort or pain, what do you want to do it? What do you want to do it? There is nothing to be afraid of, and there is nothing to be pleased about. That's all. That's all we are interested in. There is nothing to be afraid of, and there is nothing to be pleased about.
In Buddhist meditation, the concentration on the breath come under the same category as a mantra. On the,
yes, sure.
It's the same thing.
Sure. They don't all concentrate merely on the breath. Sometimes they use something else, some other sound.